Okay, let's start the session. So in this session, we're going to go back, of course, to our mindfulness training, and we're going to go back to this practice that we've been doing this morning, and that is what Alan Wallace calls settling the mind in its natural state, or simply using the mind as the object of our mindfulness training. So again, here in this practice, just to review a few things before we go back into the practice. So again, the object of this practice is the space of the mind and all the mental events that arise in that space. And the core instructions with this practice, of course, is without grasping, without distraction, meaning that to not grasp on to any appearances that arise in the mind. Simply be like the impartial observer or witness, observing mental events as they arise and pass. And so again, the mental events is the object along the space of the mind. So in this practice, we are not observing sensory objects, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations in the body. These are not part of the object. We need to let them go if we get distracted by any of the sense objects. So we are simply observing mental events. And the mental events, of course, are things like thoughts, emotions, memories, mental images, and so forth. And so within this practice then, without grasping onto them, meaning simply observing them as they arise and pass, and of course without becoming distracted. A couple of tricks or tools we can use as a beginner to help us in this practice. If we are simply always getting carried away by our thoughts and we're just getting frustrated and can't make any headway in this practice, then what we can do is every now and again deliberately generate a thought and then watch that thought as it arises in the mind, because we're expecting it, we know it's coming, and simply watch it as it arises in our mind and disappear back into space of the mind. So we, every now and again, we can deliberately generate a thought, and then we can have a bit of feeling of success that we managed to observe a thought or two in the session. Also, of course, what can be helpful to avoid getting caught up in thoughts or any mental events is this idea we talked about earlier of labeling or noting, is to give a name to the mental events. If we label them or note them, then they're an object, and that helps avoid getting caught up in them. So if you find that labeling or noting the mental event is helpful, you can use that as well. Now, in this practice, of course, we are observing the space of the mind and the mental events arising in that space. So sometimes the analogy used here to describe this is that the mind is like the sky, and that all the thoughts or mental images or mental events are like clouds moving through the sky. Another analogy sometimes used is the mind is like the stage, and all the mental events are like the actors on the stage. So we're watching a play of the mind without, of course, identifying or getting caught up in that. So within then the mental events that come up, the mental events tend to be either more subjective or objective in nature. The more objective mental events are more discrete, things like thoughts, mental images, memories. We also have more subjective mental events like emotions, moods, and desires. They seem to be more subjective in nature. So what we're going to do in this particular practice is we are going to focus on the more objective mental events, that is thoughts, memories, mental images, and then the second half of that meditation, we're going to shift to focus on the more subjective. Because often what can happen in this practice is people sort of don't notice or focus on the subjective. They're more focusing on the thoughts, memories, and mental images, and they're sort of forgetting about or not noticing the sort of emotions and moods and desires that are there as well. So we're going to explicitly focus on those so that we can become more aware of them in the meditation. So that's what we're going to do in this practice. And then after this, there's one more point I want to mention about the practice, and we'll do that after the meditation. Okay? So let's find a nice comfortable posture and do the practice again. So we begin by preparing the body, setting it into a state of relaxation, stillness, and vigilance. Allowing the entire body to become completely relaxed, completely at ease. And keeping the body as still as possible, avoiding any unnecessary movement or fidgeting. And allowing the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. Not trying to control or manipulate the breath in any way. Allowing the mind to come to rest in the present moment through focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. and allowing the eyes to be at least partially open, vacantly resting your gaze in the space in front of you. And bring your attention to your own mind. And simply observe your own mind and whatever mental events arising in the mind, without following thoughts, without trying to get rid of thoughts. Simply observe them as they arise and pass, without grasping to them, without becoming distracted. And so initially we can observe the more objective mental events. That is, observing thoughts, mental images, memories. So primarily focus on these more objective mental events. Remember, if you get caught up in a thought and got carried away, the first thing to do is simply to relax, then release grasping onto the thought, and very gently return to observing the mind. So relax, release, and return. Now shift your focus and focus primarily on the more subjective mental events, that is, emotions and moods and desires. So simply observe what sorts of emotions and desires are appearing in your mind. What is the current state of your mind?
is your mood or your emotions changing? Simply observe what is present in the moment. Without grasping, without becoming distracted.
Any questions or feedback? Of course, when particularly we have an emotion arising or even a mental affliction, any sort of mental affliction, then there will be a corresponding physical impact in the body. But here, of course, in this particular practice, we are primarily focusing on the mental aspect, the mental part of that event, not the physical impact of that emotion in the body. So in this particular, of course, they are going in together, but we're simply trying to maintain the focus on the mental event itself rather than the physical correlation of what's going on in the body. But yes, sometimes they have a strong physical component, which is hard to sort of not notice, of course. Yeah, of course, as part of the physical impact of an emotion, often the breathing gets very much affected by the type of emotion. Either it can become very shallow, it can become very fast. I mean, it can have all sorts of impact on the breath, for sure. That's definitely true. In this practice of observing the mind, yes. In general, yes. In this practice, we're just observing what's arising. As a beginning tool, we can, you know, deliberately generate something, but that's like training wheels. It's not really part of the core practice. It's just maybe something in a beginning phase that also like labeling and noting. These are beginning phase things that can help us to get into the practice. But when we actually get into the practice, then of course we're not deliberately generating any thoughts, we're not labeling or anything like that.
Yeah. I was wondering about the scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, generally, it's not because our mind is quiet. It's just that we're spaced out, no? I mean, generally, when we're in the void, it means we do that as a way of not dealing with mental events, you know. But it feels nice because we're spaced out. It's quiet. The mind. See, sometimes we do that deliberately because our mind is overwhelmed by all sorts of stuff. So we deliberately zone out, we deliberately space out to get into this sort of quiet state. But of course, this is not a very good state because there's no clarity there, there's just dullness.
Yeah, no, I was wondering what that case is. I don't know. There is nothing there. I want to understand what that case is. A couple of minutes.
I mean, it's just being spaced out, that's all. I mean, there's nothing more than that. Of course, we can genuinely be in a very quiet state, But in that quiet state, then the mind is still vivid, it's still clear. So we can be in the stillness of the mind in a vivid, clear way, which is what we're trying to do. That's what we're going to experience in this practice more and more. Or we can end up in this sort of very nebulous, dull, spaced out, quiet state. Yeah, it generally is spaced out. Yeah. It's just spaced out. Yeah. Sure, because it's very empowering, because when we're practicing this well, we're the masters of our mind. Whether the mind is still or whether the mind is moving, we are the masters. We're not the slaves anymore. So that feels good, no? To be the masters of our mind instead of being tormented by our mind. No, I mean, I think also, see, what happens is in this, any of these mindfulness practices, we start to connect with, you know, we use that analogy of the water and the sediment. You know, now our mind is like the shaken water, it's turbulent. And so all we see, we don't see any clarity of the mind. But what we see is a lot of sediment, a lot of disturbances. But as we do this practice of the mind or observing the breath, and the mind settles down, we're going to start to see these clarity and these qualities of the mind. And there are three qualities that become more and more evident. There are these three inner qualities of the mind, which is clarity, which we looked at in that definition earlier, non-conceptuality, which we experience as stillness, and bliss. So what you'll find in this sort of mindfulness training, as we start to get into the practice, we're going to start to experience each one of these three. Sometimes our mind will seem crystal clear. Other times our mind will be completely still. And other times it would be very blissful and joyful. So when we do this practice and we start to have these experiences, it's a good sign that we are heading in the right direction. But actually, all the meditation manuals warn the meditator about these experiences because they're very nice. And these are all very pleasant experiences. And there's a great danger in this mindfulness training of getting caught up in these experiences, you know, to really start craving them. And then the whole meditation practice will come to a grinding halt. So, and these are very seductive because they're something that we don't experience much usually. So when our mind is crystal clear, that feels very nice. When it is still, completely still, it feels very nice. When it's blissful, that feels very nice. So we have to be careful not to get caught up in these experiences. And what often happens, of course, when we start to have these experiences, we go, wow, that's so nice. I like that. I want that. I want that. And then we try to hold on to it and we try to recreate it. And all that happens is frustration, frustration, frustration. I know from personal experience. So when these experiences happen, rather than get caught up in them and try and hold on to them and try to recreate them, just use them as signposts that we are going in the right direction and use them as a basis to go deeper, because all of those things can help us to go deeper and further into the practice. But if we grasp onto them and try and hold on to them and try and recreate them, We're just going to come to a grinding halt, a lot of frustration. That's all that's going to happen. What we're going to notice also in this practice, of course, particularly as things like clarity improves, these mental events will become more clear to us, more vivid. And then we're really going to start to see the habit patterns of our mind more and more clearly. It will become more and more evident to us how our mind is functioning, or rather how it's dysfunctional. And once we start to see that and it becomes more obvious and more clear, it becomes harder and harder to continue engaging in that dysfunctional way because it's so clear and evident to us. So this is also a good sign that we are. And also what's going to happen is, I think in Alan Wallace's book there, he mentioned this idea of threshold. Now we can talk about, many levels of the mind. Now, our mind is very coarse and agitated. So, our level of threshold is here. We're only aware of this mental activity. Anything below here, we're not aware of. But as we progress in practice, this threshold will move down. And then we'll start to become aware of all this subtle mental activity that now is below the level of our radar. And this is very important because let's say this is anger. The initial stages of anger is coming from here, which might be some mild irritation. And now we don't really notice that. We only notice it when it's hot and it's coarse anger. But if we've got to that point, we're already more or less out of control. There's not much we can do. But if we do this mindfulness training, that threshold will move down. We'll start to notice the beginnings of anger. We'll start to notice this subtle irritation. And then we'll go, hang on, what's that? And if we can observe this arise, instead of it, we're feeding it, and it gets the end up, it'll just pass. So we're going to circumvent this. So what you'll notice in this training, that once we start to notice these things, then what you will notice in daily life, because then we get in the habit of just observing this arise and pass, arise and pass, arise and pass, what you will find in daily life is that you will find in situations that used to sort of irritate you before, you think, that's not irritating me anymore. What's going on? Because we now have this habit of noticing that subtle irritation and observing it arise and pass, and it doesn't get up higher, more coarse. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, normally, of course, when a thought arises, we don't have a dialogue with it, we just identify with it and we get caught up in it. And so the first stage of not getting caught up is to be able to have some space and then sort of have a little bit of dialogue with it. But then, of course, eventually we don't even need to have the dialogue. We can just see it arising and passing. So this is a sort of a sign that we're starting not to fully get caught up in the thought. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, we can have a still mind, as in spaced out, and there's no clarity. So if our mind is spaced out, it's quite still, though, but there's no clarity, or very little clarity. Well, so, you know, if we have a very clear mind, we can have a lot of movement in the mind still. So we can see thoughts very clearly, and our mind is not still. So they're not the same thing. But as we go further into this mindfulness training, the end result is complete clarity, complete stillness, and bliss. That is the, all of these three things together. Of course, see, our mind wants to engage in something all the time. Actually, our mind, generally, our conceptual mind doesn't like stillness. It wants to do something, it wants something. So, in fact, that's what I'm going to read now, is in here, is this stillness sometimes creates a lot of fear. So let me just read a little bit about this. Because we continually reinforce a sense of me in generally in two ways. We reinforce a sense of me in terms of a sense of a solid body, and we reinforce our sense of me in terms of our mental content. We reinforce our sense of me in terms of our thinking, emotions, memories. All of these things are reinforcing the sense of me. In this practice, of course, if we sit down in a very nice posture, we can get to the point where we don't really even notice the body. And then, of course, if the mind becomes still, then there's nothing reinforcing a sense of me. So often what happens in that stage is we're grasping, we're looking for something to reinforce. So we then can automatically go back into the body or the breath. Oh, yes, yes, I'm still here. Yeah? So there's something very nice, good to say about that, and I'll read here in the book. Page 100 it is. One of the more common challenges in the practice is the emergence of fear. As you release your grip on the contents of the mind, you are undermining your normal sense of personal identity, which is constantly reinforced by thinking, by recalling, and identifying with your personal history, hopes, and plans. You are now disengaging from these familiar supports for substantiating your ego. As lapses between thoughts occur more and more frequently and for longer periods, your awareness hovers in a kind of empty space, a vacuum devoid of personhood. You may come into the grip of fear as your normal sense of who you are loses its footing. The teacher Genlam Rinpa warned his students that such dread may well arise during this training. It is crucial, he counseled, not to identify with it or nor give it any credence. Some kinds of fear are based in reality. They protect us from danger, filling the body with energy so that we can flee or protect ourselves in whatever way necessary. But this kind of dread with no clear object has no such basis in reality. There is no danger in the empty, luminous space of awareness. You have nothing to lose but your false sense of an independent, controlling ego. The only thing being threatened is an illusion. If you don't identify with it, there's nothing to fear. If you do identify with this fear, it may bring your entire practice to a grinding halt and throw you into deep emotional imbalances. So it is of utmost importance to observe such fear without distraction and without grasping. Keep to the essentials of the practice. Anything else? Otherwise, I think it's time for dinner. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, of course, the best thing is just to observe it arise and pass. But if we are in a strong habit of always getting caught up in it, then things like labelling or noting or minimal dialogue can help avoid getting caught up. So the less dialogue, the better, of course. I mean, at some point, the dialogue just becomes another distraction. You know, so one thought leads to another dialogue, and then we have a dialogue on the dialogue on the dialogue, and so then we're just caught up in thoughts again. The space, yeah. But yeah. So what we're saying is that we experience these mental events in a more objective way or in a more subjective way. Of course, if we observe a memory, that may provoke an emotion, but we experience the memory as a more an objective event, and we experience the emotion that comes with the memory more subjectively, that's all. And so often, of course, they'll come together, but there are two things here. There's the memory, which is experienced more as an object, and then the emotion, which is a more subjective experience. So the reason I brought that in this meditation is that often when we observe the mind, people tend to more often focus only on the objective things, you know, the memories, the images, the thoughts. And because the subjective events are a little bit more sticky and more close. So sometimes it's harder to observe, or we don't even notice that. You know, it's a little bit more easy maybe to notice a thought or a mental image or a memory. Sometimes it's more hard to notice that there's some irritation or emotion going on. So I just wanted to make that distinction in this meditation, to deliberately focus on the subjective side so that we don't forget about those type of mental events. But of course, in general, in this practice, we're focusing on both of them. And if a memory comes up, we may notice very quickly some emotion comes up as well and so forth. That's all. Yes, that's a very good question. Of course, present is... I don't want to get too in-depth in this topic. Of course, present, I mean... If we look at a timeline, you know, and we say that this is the present moment, technically, it's not really, is it? Because in that period, we can divide it into three, can't we? And so that's the past, that's the future yet to come, this is the present. And then we can divide that into three, so we can keep going down, 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 and we can never really point to the present moment. But here, we are not talking in a philosophical manner, we're talking experientially. Experientially, we need a certain period of time to elapse
for us to be able to even recognize or to be able to contact an object. You know, if some mental event arises, we need some short duration of time for it to be there for us to actually perceive it. Less than that, if it's only for a very short time, we can't perceive it. So when we talk about the present moment in an experiential way, we're talking really about that minimum amount of time to elapse for us to be able to perceive some appearance. But in a sort of philosophical way, of course, we can't really point to the present moment, because each moment of time we can divide into these three. So we can keep going down, 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 and we never can point to the present moment. But that's a sort of a philosophical endeavor, whereas here, experientially in meditation, present moment really means that sort of minimum amount of time we need to be able to perceive an appearance, that's all.
Is the what?
The breath that you
take. I mean, of course, in the present moment, many things can be appearing. There can be mental events, there can be the physical events. All of these things can be occurring in the present moment. But of course, when we talk about focusing on sensory events, they, of course, only happen in the present moment. Of course, mental events also only happen in the present moment, but what the mental event is related to could be something in the past and the future. A memory only happens in the present moment, but the content of the memory could be about something in the past. Okay, let's stop there. It's time for dinner. So we'll go for dinner and come back at 7:30.